This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome in, everybody. Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line from downtown Las Vegas, our Circa Sportsbook studio. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy. Michael Lombardi is here, and we have a lot to get to today, because even from the last 24 hours when we were talking, Michael, about what would happen from the Brandon Ayuk situation in San Francisco, we've seen more changes, and we will have Matt Maiocco coming on with us. Excited to bring Matt on in 15 minutes. A really, really good breakdown for Matt on what to expect here, how we got to this point, where we go forward. You made the point, though, yesterday. We hadn't heard yet from an Adam Schefter type on this, and late last night was then the report that Pittsburgh was actually not totally out of the picture, even though the report coming in out Monday night was that it was between Cleveland and New England. Michael, what have you made? Just what we've seen here, really, the last 16 to 24 hours now, that it appears as though we're down to basically Cleveland and Pittsburgh. And there's one team Ayuk seems like he wants to go to, Pittsburgh, but there's also one team that has the better offer right now, and that's Cleveland.
Yeah, I this is so unlike Pittsburgh to go down this road and spend for a wide receiver. I think the bigger stumbling block for Pittsburgh isn't what they offer. It's how much does it take to sign Ayuk to a contract? I think that's where Kyle Shanahan has thrown up his hands. Remember, we have gone from we're not trading him to we're done with him, we're moving on. And I think where Kyle's hoping is that he can't get a contract done with any of these teams, because that's still a sticking point. He doesn't have an agreement with Cleveland. He certainly doesn't have an agreement with Pittsburgh. And he wasn't going to get an agreement. I mean, there was a word out there yesterday that the Patriots are going to have to pay a loser tax. Like, I had no idea. Why would the Patriots even be interested in this guy? Like, they're so far away from needing they need more things than just a receiver. They need to figure out if they have the quarterback solved. So I think, to me, this has the potential, and I'd be interested to see what Matt says. This has the potential to fall apart, where they might have to, like Jimmy Garoppolo, you're practicing on this field over here. No way, but come back, come over here.
And also, I mean, I think about what happened yesterday at camp. You had reports coming out that essentially the hold-in was driving Kyle Shanahan crazy. It's something like something you exactly allude to, Michael. Like, how real from what you've heard is that, that at this point for Ayuk, where San Francisco went from thinking they were going to be able to keep him under control, get the deal done, to now it seems like it's out of their hands. Is it real that he's actually causing, like, he's basically causing rifts now? It's a training camp. You have Christian McCaffrey going on NFL Network saying, you know, kind of slipping and saying it's my ex-teammate as far as referencing Ayuk. Like, what are you hearing on that front?
Well, I think the contract's a problem. I think they've thrown their hands up. I think, to me, the 49ers have always been a team that's been willing to spend. They've been very good in terms of managing their cap. But, I mean, at some point you have to say, look, if you want over $30 million, when DJ Moore just got $27 million, what competitive advantage is it for us to go ahead and give you that money? What does that do for us, right? We want to sign our own players, but we're not being reasonable. And I think the locker room, you have to be respectful towards your locker room. I think it's one of the things that causes chaos in locker rooms. You know, you pay this guy this much and you don't pay that guy, and you pay this guy. You know, there has to be a little bit of decorum within the room. And look, I think Ayuk's a good player. I'm not saying he's not, but he is replaceable. There'll be another receiver.
Chaos, probably the best way to describe that San Francisco training camp so far. You factor in that, the Trent Williams holdout, now an injury to Christian McCaffrey, which comes out after we were done on the air yesterday, Michael, set to miss the entire preseason with a hamstring strain. As far as replaceable, because clearly what Pittsburgh originally wanted to offer, the whole reason, if you read the reports, why they were not in that original final two when the report Monday night that said it was New England and Cleveland, was because they weren't willing, most likely, to part ways with the George Pickens. They did not have that replaceable sort of player. So I wonder, how do you get now to a situation where the team, San Francisco, agrees? Like, how much will they have to sacrifice to get Ayuk off their hands, to get a deal that is at least palatable for them, when you don't have that immediate obvious replacement player? That's where I keep coming back to on Pittsburgh.
Well, I mean, you know, Pittsburgh's going to have to, they're going to have to figure out something. I think, to me, when they traded, when they made the trade for Jackson, the corner, and they sent Johnson, the receiver, out, you know, that would have made more sense if he was still on the team to be involved in this deal, but that was time and place. there's a report out of a local host in Pittsburgh now saying that the deal has been there's a verbal agreement in place. I'm not buying any of this until it comes from somebody of a credible source. I think people are trying to get ahead of it by just saying it's going to happen. Look, I have a hard time thinking that Brandon Ayuk's a top five paid receiver in the league. I really do. I'm sorry, but I do. You know, would I pay him that? No, I would try to find another player. The thing coming back for Pittsburgh, you know, they're going to get a first round pick, but they need more than that because you're not going to be able to replace a good young receiver this year. So you need something to come in to help you. And I think the 49ers are going to have to figure that out.
The report, too, you're talking about highest five, top five paid wide receivers. That was the report from the New England side, which was they had been working toward that. They were willing to make Ayuk a top five wide receiver. Deal ultimately doesn't happen and doesn't happen the way they wanted to because Ayuk didn't have interest in going to New England. But it is weird. Like, you have New England, a team that you would never have thought would be in that position in a rebuild based on the organization and their past. Pittsburgh, a team you would not think would be in a position like this either, to be looking to shell out so much future capital to bring in a guy like Ayuk. Why do you think now, all of a sudden, Michael, 2024, I get you can tie it to, all right, Bill Belichick's out of the building in New England. Maybe there's a shift going on theologically there in New England. But you know, Mike Tomlin still runs things in Pittsburgh. It is still a very traditional-based franchise. Like, what do you think is the reasoning behind that? You have two teams, very traditional, that are now going after a guy like Ayuk.
Yeah, I think to me that you know, I can only I can't speak for the new Patriots because they do things completely differently than anything. I mean, they've got 25 people on the coaching staff. They buried everything that's ever happened in that building before. So I can't speak for them. Pittsburgh, I get the sense that they feel like, look, we have a good team. We just need this one receiver to go along with Pickens. I think they want somebody to come in who's going to help Pickens become a better player and grow up, and they don't have to be subservient to Pickens because I think he's a problem. Wait, what do you think he's going to be like, Ben, once this contract comes in? What do you think he's going to be like?
Ayuk, the report too, he didn't want to go to Cleveland. I mean, I get that there's concerns about the quarterback in Cleveland, rightly so, but you want to stack Cleveland and Pittsburgh's roster together right now as it stands today, August 7th, and tell me I'd rather take my chances in the situation with Pittsburgh over Cleveland? When you think about the team as a whole and who has a better chance of going to the postseason, winning more games, winning a division title, winning, making a long shot run at winning a conference, in what world is that team Pittsburgh?
I can't explain it. Like, I don't understand his love affair for Pittsburgh or what he sees, you know, but I know this, that, you know, this again isn't what Pittsburgh typically does. Cleveland makes sense for San Francisco tremendously. They get Amari Cooper. Now, Amari may not block like Ayuk can block, but Amari's going to be able to win on the outside in one-on-one coverage, which is really what they need to have happen. So I think, to me, that's where it makes the most sense. Well, my question is, why is Cleveland in this, willing to give up first-round pick? Why are they in it?
Mm-hmm.
They just redid Amari Cooper's deal. They've got Elijah Moore. They brought in Jerry Jeudy. I mean, how many more weapons do they need on their team?
It's also the, oh, by the way, on Pittsburgh. It's not like that quarterback situation is all that golden right now. Anyway, we're getting reports that Wilson QB1, but Fields will start the preseason opener. You can't tell me that this is just some obvious, oh, yeah, Wilson, he has the job locked up, and he is guaranteed to have at least some sort of leash. There's no way.
No. I think that's wide open, and I think we'll end up seeing both quarterbacks play in Pittsburgh. I think that could be the case.
Brandon Ayuk, it's been a journey, man. And again, we're going to hear from Matt Maiocco in a little bit. Coming up in our next segment here, he's answered a few of our questions. They're practicing now, so we had Matt come on with us about 15, 20 minutes ago to pre-tape that interview. We'll get your reaction as well on that, Michael, and excited, too, to get his take. We'll also go out to D. Orlando Ledbetter, who's been a long-time outstanding beat reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution covering the Falcons. D. Orlando Ledbetter joins us 2:30 Eastern. You have a lot of questions, Michael, on the Atlanta Falcons this year. We'll do burning questions on both the Niners and the Falcons today. Also, we do get, I know Elliot Bowman, our producer, he's pumped because Hard Knocks is underway, and the hype train will only ratchet up on the Chicago Bears. So it's a team we've been asking a lot of questions about for Chicago. I didn't see the starters at all in the Hall of Fame game. Will there be more of that in preseason week one? But here we go. Hard Knocks season, Michael. Hype only is building now on the Chicago Bears. You love to see it.
Yeah, I think what Nick Saban said is true, though. I think the hardest challenge for Matt Eberflus is to lower the expectations in Chicago have always gone through the roof, starting with Mitchell Trubisky, MVP, Justin Fields, MVP. Somebody's got to manage it. And I don't think it's fair for Caleb Williams behind a line that we're not sure is going to be good enough. He's going to make mistakes. I think what Nick Saban said about all the interceptions that Peyton Manning threw his first year. Look, it's going to take some time to figure out what does Caleb Williams do really well? What does he do really well? What should we avoid? Where do we need to go? Those are the kind of things that you use for the first part of preseason in September. All right, now we get it going. Because remember, and I wrote about this yesterday for VSiN Online. I mean, when you watch the first game where C.J. Stroud threw the first pass over to his left against the Patriots, it was in the dirt. Then that same drive, he throws an interception. Like, it's going to take some time for these quarterbacks to kind of get figure it out. Like Bo Nix, it's not going to happen overnight. But I do think if they can lower the expectations, Caleb will be a good player for him.
It's just when you put that number one by the guy's name on the draft order and what he represents, it becomes very hard for people to take a rational view. And keep in mind, this is only – like, I get why the Bears are so excited and Bears fans are and bettors, because this is only the fourth time the Bears have drafted a quarterback in the top 12 since 99. And you think about the three that came before Caleb Williams. You go back to Cade McNown, who, you know, was set such a bright, promising start, then gets injured, was never the same. Then Mitchell Trubisky, Justin Fields, it's, you know, both had brief flashes and then never really were able to live up to their expectations. You get why Bears fans want it so bad, but you also have to have a dose of reality when it comes into that, too.
They don't have reality. I mean, anybody who bet Mitchell Trubisky to be MVP, you've lost all sense of reality. Yeah, let's face it.
It didn't go well for young Mitchell Trubisky, trying to find his way now in the league. When we return, we will have that interview with Matt Maiocco for NBC Sports Bay Area. We'll also get into some burning questions Michael Lombardi has for the San Francisco 49ers and get into his keys to watch in the preseason, all still to come right here on the Lombardi Line.
Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Underway on the Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line with Michael. I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy Bonatoni. A lot of Niners talk coming up this hour. We'll go into the San Francisco 49ers burning questions Michael has. We'll also go into evaluating the preseason. And right now, we go to Matt Maiocco, we recorded this earlier, Michael, while you were hanging out with Mr. McAfee a little bit earlier before the show here. As San Francisco 49ers practice is underway right now, here's my conversation with Matt Maiocco for NBC Sports Bay Area 49er Insider, who just joins us right now on the Lombardi Line. Let's go out to our progressive guest line now as we welcome in Matt Maiocco from NBC Sports Bay Area. He's had a busy week with training camp going on. We'll talk all things Brandon Ayuk, Trent Williams, as well as Christian McCaffrey. Matt, thanks so much for giving us a few minutes here, as it has been quite the hectic few days for you. As even from when we were on the air yesterday, there's been some changing to the reporting. Just want to get everybody up to speed here and how we've gotten from your initial reporting, which was the inclusion of New England, Cleveland, Washington, and Pittsburgh, to now where we're at now, where it seems like it's Cleveland and Pittsburgh and New England the latest to fall out of the fold here. How have we gotten from that four down to two, and how have things progressed even in the last 24 hours as this has continued to develop?
Yeah, I mean, things kind of have to, by the way, thanks for having me on your show, but yeah, things kind of have to work on a parallel track. The 49ers had a trade in place with both the Patriots and the Browns, as I reported Monday night. And at that point, when I reported Monday night, the Steelers were effectively out, telling the 49ers that they just couldn't go to the spot where the 49ers wanted them to go. Meanwhile, Ayuk knows exactly what the contract offers would be from each of those teams. Now, Ayuk, you know, using his own words, I mean, he's been quite upfront that the teams that he kind of sought to go to, if he didn't remain with the 49ers, were Washington and Pittsburgh. And I'm not sure, you know, the reasoning or what that's based on, but that's what he has said. Washington never really showed an inclination to either meet the demands of the 49ers or to meet the demands of Ayuk. So they really weren't a player in this. Pittsburgh, I think after they see that Brandon Ayuk didn't appear to be a real keen on going to New England or Cleveland, you know, and they realize that that I does have an affinity for Pittsburgh, that he would want to go there. I think Pittsburgh got back in the mix. And so no agreement has been reached with the 49ers and the Steelers, and that's kind of where things stand. But meanwhile, I think, you know, Ayuk knows exactly where things would stand from a contractual standpoint. So as I see it, he doesn't – and last night, by the way, Adam Schefter reported that the Patriots have removed themselves from the picture, I think in large part because the Patriots figured that Ayuk wasn't going to sign off on a deal to go there. So I think the Browns are kind of in the same boat a little bit, so – I wouldn't be shocked if the Browns get out of it too, and then leave it just up to the 49ers and the Steelers to see if something can happen between those teams.
He's Matt Maiocco joining us right now on the Lombardi Line. Follow Matt Maiocco, NBCS. What you're saying about Pittsburgh, it leads me to believe that there was some leverage there they believe they could get into, seeing the lack of desire that you just laid out for both the New England and the Cleveland fits. It also leads into now, what would Pittsburgh be giving up, since initially, like you said, coming to the table, they thought, all right, we can't give you enough for what for San Francisco, what you were wanting to receive here in exchange for Ayuk. How wide is that gap right now, and where do you see Pittsburgh having to go now that they clearly understand there is some leverage there and there is room for them to find a way to find that, you know, that perfect fit that they want with Ayuk?
Yeah, I think, you know, the 49ers from the Patriots and from the Browns, they were getting players back, wide receivers back. And, you know, there are a lot of moving parts to those. As far as, you know, the deals were different because, you know, the difference between Amari Cooper and Kendrick Bourne, you know, the draft picks were kind of similar, but there's, you know, there was money that the 49ers would be paying off on Ayuk's deal. If he were to go to Cleveland, they wouldn't be paying off any of the money if he were to go to the Patriots. But as I mentioned, the Patriots are out of it. So as far as the Steelers go, I don't know that they have a player that the 49ers would want, or at least I'm not sure that they would give up a player that the 49ers would want. So therefore, I think the 49ers would have to ask for more in the way of draft pick compensation. That's something that has kind of flown, you know, in the face of how the Steelers have operated in the past. And I think the idea for the 49ers would be, if they can squeeze out some day two draft picks, then maybe they can flip one of those picks and maybe one of their own and go get a wide receiver from another team. So that's even more moving parts. That becomes even a little bit more complex, because now the 49ers kind of, you know, concurrently while working with the Steelers on a deal, have to be kind of checking out what players might be available at the wide receiver position on other teams around the league. So there's just a lot going on. But I would think if the 49ers and the Steelers are able to come up with a deal and finalize that and then take that to Ayuk, I think he's going to be a member of the Steelers, because I think that whatever the contract terms are that the Steelers have provided to Brandon Ayuk and his camp, I think that would be enough to get the job done. And as you know, Kyle Shanahan said yesterday, there have been, you know, the 49ers have given permission to teams to talk to Ayuk. And my reporting is that the 49ers have given permission, and they've had this permission for quite some time for the Patriots, the Browns, the Steelers, and Washington to talk to Ayuk. And so right now, the way things stand, it's, you know, the teams in the picture are the Browns a little bit. They already have the trade in place with the 49ers, but they don't have the contract in place with Ayuk. And then, of course, the Steelers, who have, you know, the contract more than likely in place, and then just trying to work out the deal with the 49ers. And then, of course, you know, at the same time, let's not rule out the possibility, although right now maybe a little bit far-fetched, but it's, as long as nothing has happened, it remains a possibility of Brandon Ayuk somehow remaining with the 49ers this season.
Really good insight on the 49ers from Matt Maiocco. Seems at this point like that is the most unlikely of the options, even though, yes, greater than 0%. Aiyuk stays 49ers. Seems, though, like what you're saying, more likely than not, Aiyuk to Pittsburgh here. How about the Trent Williams piece of this on the offensive line? Now that the team will, once this gets done, you start to shift towards Williams. It's been obviously a stormy preseason, and you think about already now the injury to Christian McCaffrey out the rest of preseason, too, with the hamstring strain. What are you hearing as far as the Williams front and any progress on a deal there?
I don't think there's been much progress. I think the 49ers are kind of looking at Trent Williams as somebody who's been in the league a long time. He's 36 years old. He knows exactly what he needs to get ready for the regular season. And I think they believe that when he believes he has to get into camp, that's when he'll get into camp. Now, he is the sixth highest paid offensive lineman in the league. You know, that market has gone up just like the wide receiver market has gone up. And so I think from the 49ers standpoint, they're looking at this as they see, I think they would probably like to do something similar to what the Rams did with Matthew Stafford, something similar to what the Dolphins did with Tyreek Hill, is you don't necessarily include a lot of new money in the deal, but you replace the non-guaranteed money with guaranteed money. So that is probably the best case scenario for the 49ers to get something done. But right now there hasn't been, you know, much movement at all or any movement as far as getting Trent Williams in camp.
You see Matt Maiocco's work at NBC Sports Bay Area, 49ers insider at Maiocco NBCS. Really appreciate the time, Matt. It's a very, very busy stretch for you. We certainly thank you. I can't thank you enough for coming on with us today.
All right, Ben, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, Michael, what do you make of what Matt had to say there?
Well, I mean, Matt laid it out. I think the kid wants to play for Pittsburgh. There's all sorts of reports that there's been a deal in place with Pittsburgh. Again, I have a hard time understanding Pittsburgh's willingness to spend this, but let's face it, Pittsburgh doesn't have a lot of money tied up in their quarterback position. They do have a relatively young team, so doing this deal isn't going to affect them cap-wise whatsoever. It's just unlike them to give up valuable draft choices, sure, although they did for Minkah Fitzpatrick when they traded for him in midseason, and that has worked out well for them. So, look, I think Pittsburgh, it feels like they have a chance to compete. You know, they won 10 games. They lost to Arizona last year, and they lost to the Patriots, two of the worst teams in the league, and they still won 10 games. Remarkable, right?
Right.
I don't get the sense that he wants to go to Cleveland. Somebody, he's going to have to be a contract. I still think the Niners have to get enough back to make it worth their while. Remember, for all the talk that Aiyuk has to leverage, the Niners still have to say yes.
Think about how crazy now, and there's already so much depth in the AFC North talent-wise, this would already make that even a greater case, especially for a Pittsburgh team that a lot of bettors are down on. 8.5 win total, juiced heavy to the under after that 10-win season in 2023. We'll have a lot more to say as far as the San Francisco 49ers, because we'll get into Michael's burning questions for the Niners yet, and those don't even include what is happening on the Brandon Aiyuk front here. But a really good breakdown from Matt Maiocco. Seems like the lean would be Aiyuk to Pittsburgh as it stands. Again, right now, there's nothing, though, that is definitive or confirmed on that. We'll talk burning questions on the Niners when we return right here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
I don't know about you, Michael. I'm ready for some burning questions on the San Francisco 49ers. I feel like they've been under the microscope really the last like 2 or 3 days. I mean, that has been the team everyone wants to talk about, largely because of the Brandon Aiyuk saga. Also, the Christian McCaffrey hamstring strain that gets reported yesterday, out for the rest of preseason. You have Trent Williams, his contract situation yet to be resolved yet. We're setting all that aside, as crazy as that is. We still have a lot of questions here to get into on the San Francisco 49ers as we continue our team breakdowns here on the Lombardi Line. Hey, Michael, I think the first thing that stands out as far as some of your burning questions we want to get into, it's a front seven and a D-line that people look at the names on paper and probably say this is one of the better groups in the NFL, yet you dive a little deeper into the stats and they weren't maybe as dominant as some of the initial numbers would indicate on that front.
Yeah, I mean, just this, think about this. Well, you got Nick Bosa, you had Chase Young, Hargrave, you had Armstead up front. They were 24th in third down conversions allowed per game. You know, they were in 23. In 15, they were 15th overall. You know, their defense played too many plays. They played 76 in the Super Bowl. They played 61 during the season. But more than anything, I think that pressure never manifested itself. Everything about the 49ers is we got to win with the front. We have to win with the front. We got to get pressure from the front. We've got to dominate with our front four. And like the Eagles last year, they slipped in that area. They made a lot of mental mistakes within the coverages. They just weren't sound all the time. And I think one of the things that drove Kyle Shanahan crazy, because he does spend time with the defense, was being able to not get everybody in sync. And the other area was their defensive line not playing. So for all the talk about Ayuk, and God knows we've spent way too much time talking about him, it's really about, do you think Leonard Floyd's going to make a difference to this defensive front? Do we think Malik Collins is going to fill in the void? I think those are more important questions than anything.
I understand that analytically speaking, San Francisco is in a situation where, and a lot of NFL teams do this defensively, they are much more, you know, want to give up plays on the run game versus the pass game, because your more explosive plays are going to come through the air naturally. So you kind of focus on, all right, even if we encourage teams to run the ball, and Kansas City did this last year, their run defense numbers weren't all that good, just like San Francisco's, which was, you know, 25th defending the run on an EPA per play basis. There's still part of me, though, Michael, that believes, like, the balance you have to have. I get that wanting to limit the big plays is massive, and San Francisco had a great secondary and all the numbers were good, but you still, with the guys you have, need to be getting more out of, even in situations like that. And it kind of is reflected in, you know, mediocre as far as yards per drive allowed last year. I still wonder where the team goes from there on that edge. And it kind of leads into how we're talking about this dichotomy between run and pass defense with the San Francisco going into this year.
You know, I think this, Ben, run defense is overrated when you have a really good offense. And what do I mean by that? When you get a team like Baltimore last year or Dallas, and they're playing from behind, it's hard for them to run. Dallas's run defense was not good last year, but you couldn't get to it because they kept building a lead on you and forced you to throw the football. This is why the 49ers, that's their theory. They want to score early in the game so that they don't have to play run defense, so that their pass rush, Leonard Floyd, Hargrave, Bosa, Gross Matos, all these guys they got on the team, they brought in, can take over and rush the passer. That's the theory. That essentially really is the definition of what the West Coast offense is. We're going to score early, and we're going to rush the passer. And part of that equation is you can't run the ball on us, you know, because if you can run the ball on us, like, you know, people could run the ball on Arizona, but they could also throw it. But you don't stop running the ball in Arizona because you're never playing from behind against Arizona.
Yeah, it becomes irrelevant. Exactly.
This is what we're talking about, complementary football, right? How do you do that? And this is what it all plays into. In San Francisco, yes, they're run defense numbers, but it's hard to make a living running the football against them because you're behind. And as long as they can score points, this defense will be able to do. Now, the other thing that helps this defense a lot is what I mentioned earlier, is they played 61 plays on average on a team. The offense has the ball all the time. So they're playing single games, whereas New England's defense last year was playing doubleheaders.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, in San Francisco, it's another question you have. I mean, you think about the other side of the ball on that. Why is that the case? Well, 49ers so good at moving the chains, right? It's the early down success and what Kyle Shanahan has been a genius at mastering. I now wonder, naturally, going forward, how do they look to replicate that when they have offensive line question marks and when you have a quarterback in Brock Purdy that will be as under the microscope as ever now coming into this year?
Well, I think more than ever that what stops Kyle is when he has a hard time holding up front. That's why the Trent Williams thing is so important. I think what Matt said about him was true. There's a way to adjust this deal. I'm sure the Niners know it. And he'll come in because he's not going to pass up a game check. We know that. And he's got enough pride to want to play good in the opener against the Jets because he knows he's got a good defensive front coming at him. So he's going to be there to start the season. He's not going to not come in. And I think ultimately that's the key to this offense and being able to run the football outside with Kittle. I mean, look, this offensive line doesn't really dominate up front, but they get ahead, they run. And like we know too, which I think is one of the most fascinating stats, and I don't say this to you in any way, but I know how you gravitate towards the analytics and you love them, and I love numbers too. I think we have a lot of ways to try to understand numbers. But the one thing that I think is interesting about the run game is the Texans last year were 21st in rushing attempts per game. They were 31st in rushing first downs per game. They ranked 31st in rushing yards per percentage of their offense. And yet they were unbelievable throwing the football. The threat of the run, even if you can't run it, is still a dynamic element to the offense. And that's why Kyle has such an advantage, because he can run it, but the threat of the run makes those receivers a lot better.
100%. And I wonder why so many aggressive thinking, forward thinking offensive play callers, they've used so much motion, they've used so much play action where it makes it really difficult. You're giving the threat of the run. You're also forcing defenders to be shifting. You're unable to really hone in on exactly what the offense wants to do. That can certainly open up the deeper passes down the field. How much of that will Shanahan look to increase for Brock Purdy, who, that's a guy you broke down the numbers. I mean, it's not like he was throwing an unbelievably high rate of RPO play action sort of things in 2023 here, that you would kind of assume with an offensive line that has some question marks. I would think Kyle Shanahan would try to look into that even more as a guy who's been a preeminent voice as far as pre-snap motion and deception in general for his offenses.
Yeah, I think to me, one of the big misnomers about Brock Purdy is there's a lot of room for improvement. I mean, his numbers were slightly less in 23 than they were in 22. He can get better. I mean, his accuracy was at 16. He had 16.3% bad throws, 75% on target. Both those numbers can get better in this offense. He only had, for all the conversation about the RPO game, he only had 20 pass attempts in the RPO game. Think about that. Only 20. They're not an RPO team, just like the Houston Texans aren't a running team. See, I think the thing that numbers tell us is who you really are, right? Who are you? And this is a team that's play action yards after the catch. And for all the people that want to criticize Purdy, his air yards, you know it as well as anybody, is as good as anybody in the league.
Over 8. You're looking right at Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Jordan Love, guys who have been consistently pushing the ball deep down the field. I mean, there are some metrics that say Purdy, like you look at the incompletion percentage over expectation, it's a number I always gravitate towards simply because it is a great barometer of how successful are you on your base throws relative to how difficult they are. I think a lot of people would just assume, oh yeah, Purdy, he's just throwing these little drag routes over the middle. These are easy throws. He should complete all of them. Best guy in the league as far as completion percentage over expectation. Like, he's making throws into tight windows.
And no question, and nobody wants to give him credit for it. That's why the numbers don't lie, right? And look, can they overcome Ayuk? Yeah, I think they can. Does it mean they're not going to win the Super Bowl because they don't have Ayuk? No. I mean, the Chiefs won 2 Super Bowls without Tyreek Hill, so we know it could happen. Now, who they bring in to replace him remains to be seen.
The thing, too, you talk about inconsistency for Purdy, because the numbers overall really, really good, but there is room for improvement. Where do you stand from the turnover perspective, where the Niners were good for the most part, but when they had bad games, it seemed like things really piled up in a hurry last year?
Yeah, in 9 games, they don't commit a turnover, and they were 9-0 in those games. In 3 games, they had 3 or more turnovers, they were 0-3. In 2 games with 2 or 1 turnover, they were 4-3. When they protect the ball, they win. That's obvious. That's not a hard thing to figure out. Bella over here could get that one down. The reality here is that, a couple of those games, Cleveland, of course, the Cleveland game really is interesting because it's a loss, but, that one's on the kicker. He got him in field goal range. They had a chance to win that game, and Moody didn't make the kick. So, and then the Minnesota game, I think he was concussed trying to play through that. I really do.
I think you can make a really good case on that. For more breakdown, by the way, in the San Francisco 49ers, want to check out the new offer we have right now with all of our betting guides out, NFL and college, but especially right now, you can get both guides, 3 years of VSiN Pro access for just $350. You can do that, VSiN.com/subscribe, and offer going on for the rest of the week. You know who's the bottom 2 last year in completion percentage over expectation, Michael? Aiden O'Connell, Gardner Minshew. Dead last, those 2. We'll talk more preseason expectations when we come back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on the Lombardi Line with Michael Lombardi, I'm Ben Wilson in for Stormy. We are just a day away, Michael, from kicking off week one of the NFL preseason. Line moves galore. I mean, the Pats out to 6.5-point favorites against the Panthers? Sure, why not? It seems like that is the time of year we're getting all sorts of crazy line moves on that. But I think more so than anything, we want to get a nice refresher. We've done this each and every year. It's always really, really good, I think, actionable insight to give to bettors, to football fans in general. Michael, it's taking a look at the biggest things for you to watch out for the preseason. Like, I give you a lot of credit because I used to sit there and go, okay, I don't care. None of this stuff matters. And then you kind of opened my eyes to how awful the Panthers were looking in preseason last year. And we kind of went from being high on Carolina to like, this might not be going as well as we thought. And then sure enough, it was a disaster. Frank Reich gets fired midseason. I think wasn't that probably the best example of what you could clearly see in front of you, Michael, last year that then translated directly into the regular season?
Well, I mean, you could see if a team's worked hard in practice. You could see if a team's kind of committed to what they want to become. And more than anything, you know, leadership is a function of questions. And the main question any leader of any organization has to answer is, who are we? And I think in the preseason, regardless of who's in the uniform, you know who you are. And I think that's the most important thing. I think you have to be able to understand that and see that and work towards that in the summer. And so many teams lose sight of that.
All of a sudden you come out and you're going, yeah, you're getting blown up at the line of scrimmage. You are looking undisciplined in every facet of the game. And as you allude to, Michael, all of a sudden you just don't seem to have much of an identity. So we'll get into this, a full article up, VSiN.com. We're taking a look at all of your keys, Michael, to evaluating the preseason. And we'll start with the most important position. And it's probably, you know, it's something that you might think would go the opposite here, where you're taking something with a grain of salt. It's not to form too many judgment on these young quarterbacks or rookies, especially in that position when it starts out, when we have so much movement and processing that will take place, especially through preseason. And wouldn't you probably say a lot of these teams are not going to be, you know, going all that deep into the playbook either, as they don't want to give up too much of their insights there.
Yeah, no, but I think to me, what you have to do is when you're watching it is you got to be really slow in the quarterback. And I cite the example with CJ Stroud last year, because when I watched that tape, I'm like, oh my God, this guy's got a long way to go. This guy's got no chance to be a good player. He throws it out in the dirt. You know, nothing looked good to him. And then, you know, opening weekend, he looked a lot better. You know, if you go back and watch opening weekend with CJ Stroud against the Baltimore Ravens, they moved the football. They moved the ball. They just couldn't get it in the end zone. They struggled there. So, you know, I just felt like you have to be really careful to not overjudge. Look at Aiden O'Connell. You know, we talked about this when we went to break. The two worst quarterbacks in the league last year were Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell in completion over expectation. I mean, last summer, was he, you know, he was the star of the camp, right? Everybody loved him. How about Sam Ellinger? Does everybody love Sam Ellinger? He's a great Colt McCoy was one of the best preseason quarterbacks you could have. But when the game speeds up, and all of a sudden, now you're in nickel, odd floater. Where's the mic? Where's the will? Who's coming from where? Who do I have to block? Who's hot? Who's not? It's hard. It's hard to piece it all together. So I think, to me, we have to be really careful. And I said this on McAfee today. I think what happens is you got to give quarterbacks at least 20 games if they're starters before you can really say, who are we? Jalen Hurts is an example. Okay, last year people rushed Jalen Hurts a certain way. They rushed him from the defensive left, the offensive right. They forced him to try to scramble to his left and then took a chances of him not running or making a bad play. And his eye level went down. It's the same thing with Kyler Murray. Why has Kyler Murray's numbers shifted dramatically down over the career? When he's in the pocket, we have to be really careful judging quarterbacks too quickly, especially positively or negatively. Mm-hmm.
I know on the negative side, I mean, Jordan Love, you remember some of those early preseason games. Inaccurate. I mean, he's sailing 10-yard crossing routes to wide-open tight ends by 7 yards, and you're going, wait, what? What are they seeing this guy? And it all makes sense in kind of in retrospect on that. You can't totally look at preseason from quarterbacks as the be-all, end-all of evaluation. Completely with you on that. How about the trenches? That's where you can get a lot of insight on these teams. Michael, what do you make of how to really break down and what we'll get out of a lot of preseason that will a lot of times reflect itself on the O-lines?
Well, that's part of the – this is the hardest part, is to evaluate the offensive line, because a lot of the teams don't play their linemen that often. But you got to find out if they have anybody who's adequate in the backup. Like, and I cited the Giants, right? The Giants, they lose Evan Neal. They put Illuminor over at right tackle. They have to sign Van Rote to play right guard. Okay, they got two of the starting linemen from the Raiders. That's not good. Who's the backups? Like, is there anybody in that backup line that could be good enough to come in and play? Because we know this about offensive linemen. Rarely does an entire offensive line play 17 games, 60 minutes. Somebody's got to come in and play. You got to have some backups. Like the Jets, for example. You know, we were talking yesterday about how someone mentioned they're a top five line. They're not. That's a lie. That's a complete lie. However, we want to watch him this summer to see with Tucker back. You know, what's Morgan Moses look like at his age? Can Tyron Smith even practice or play? What's the young rookie look like? I think all those things are really important. They may become a top five line, but based on where they were last year, they're just names on a depth chart.
May or may not be some hype around that Jet team, Michael. Maybe you heard. May or may not be why the positional ratings get so jacked up for the Jets with all the expectations for 2024. I've just a hunch on that. It's a great tool, too. We're talking about, you know, not forming judgments on these young quarterbacks early in preseason, really looking at the offensive lines. This can really help you as we get into the regular season here. It reminds us of Winner's Circle Proxy, which is an outstanding tool we have partnered here with VSiN. They can help you with all the contests that are coming up. Circa Million, Circa Survivor, which gets underway. $16 million in guaranteed cash prizes with one trip to Vegas before the NFL season kicks off. It's the ultimate contest weekend from Circa August 22nd through the 24th. And Winner Circle Proxy clients get special perks like monthly access to VSiN Pro, stadium swim passes, free drink tickets, and all sorts of other cool stuff. Head over to WinnerCircleProxy.com now and book your appointment today. Contest season, yes, about upon us. It also leads into probably the, you know, the final topic on this, Michael, as far as biggest things to look out for in the preseason, that it goes involved, it involves coaching, and there's not just head coach movements, but I mean all the coordinator movements, the positional movements. That's something that you, I know, are always more than anything honed in on as we get into the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, and it starts in the preseason. You can't wait until the opening day. For example, the big ESPN article today about Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni having a lot of conflict. And so they bring Kellen Moore in. Well, we're going to watch what Kellen Moore wants to do. You know, Kellen Moore, what is he going to do offensively to the Eagles? What are they going to look like? It's not about how their execution is. It's what's their design. I think you can get a lot from watching the design of teams. You know, how they emphasize Seattle. What's that defensive front going to look like? Are they going to be an odd team, even team? How are they going to play it? They're not going to be elaborate with schemes, but we're going to get an idea. And I think the impact of the coaching, remember, you're either coaching it or allowing it to happen. And so you can see it in the preseason. You know, last year we saw Carolina was not very well coached from first day. You know, you could see it from the beginning, you know, and there's a lot of young coaches. What's Baltimore going to look like with Zach Orr coaching the defense, right? It's going to be the same look, but is it going to be the same pad level, the same intensity, the same detail? Same thing in Miami down there. Anthony Weaver takes over. Joe Barry's also going to help them. What's that defense going to look like? What's their effort level? How hard do they play? Atlanta, Raheem Morris comes in, takes over with Jimmy Lake. There's so many of them that, you know, we get so caught up in just, oh, who's playing? It's not who's playing. It's what are they playing in and how are they playing and where do they fit?
I think a lot of fans struggle with then that is that sort of the dual thought in their head. And I admit to thinking this too of, you know, that's great and all, but how do you really know when you have a lot of these young coaches, especially who just don't want to play anybody? Like, how can you still get a sense for that identity, a sense for how teams are buttoned up and their aggressiveness when you know that they don't really care about winning? They're making that statement with the personnel on the field, because clearly you're saying there's a way to find that out. It just might not be as apparent as you would think from a win-loss perspective.
Well, you could see it from the pad level. You could see it from their execution. You could see it from the timing. I mean, you could see it pretty quick. I mean, if you watch Bill Walsh coach a quarterback and you watch someone else who's, you know, say Matt Canada coach the quarterback, I promise you, you don't need to be a scholar in football to tell who's the better quarterback, who's more coached correctly. I think that's pretty clear, right? And that's really what you're doing in the summer. You're watching and evaluating. Hey, are they getting asked to do what they do? Are they buttoned up? Is there a rhythm? Do they have a really new coaches? What's their substitution like? What's the sideline like? How are they handling all these decisions that are coming in? Who's helping them? Who's the communication? I think it's a lot to see in the summer. You just got to look for it.
No doubt. Well, you get one of our two games tomorrow. I mean, it's two first-year coaches. We are going to find out a lot when you have Dave Canales, Gerard Mayo, Carolina, New England. 6.5. It's still nuts to me. 6.5. I get that Carolina isn't playing anybody. 6.5 for New England. A total of 33.5, too. One of the lowest on the boards in week one. All right, really good first hour in the books, Michael. We'll talk to D. Orlando Ledbetter of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution coming up in about a half hour to break down all things Atlanta Falcons. Up next, lots of injury news around the league. We'll break it all down right after this.